This is the I Found It on Reddit short stories podcast. I am DodgeThis82, and today I'm being joined by author Mike Jesus Langer and narrator Tim Burgee. How y'all doing today?
Surviving.
Great, good to be here.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Dodge.
Oh, you're so welcome, Mike. You were an easy candidate. How are y'all doing today? Let's start with the basics.
I'm doing a lot of editing these days. So for the past 2 weeks, I haven't been writing that much. It's just been staring into Audacity and equalizing stuff. So I'm looking forward to being done with that somewhere down the line.
Please do tell me about it. I feel like that's my life. Like I wake up, maybe eat, and then Audacity, like the Audacity screen for hours.
Yeah, Audacity is a very reliable companion.
Oh, okay, so you do use Audacity. You don't use a different audio editing?
I'll use RX for like mouth clicks and de-essing and all that sort of stuff. So like the more detailed messing around with recordings, but when I'm actually cutting together the projects, it's Audacity because I refuse to learn new things.
Man, I'm telling you, and everyone's just like, no, you should go. You should not still be in Audacity. You need to graduate from that and grow up.
That's every sound designer.
Yeah. Everyone. They're like, but this is so much better. I'm like, yeah, I know. But then, you know, that's a day.
Yeah, exactly.
of me trying to figure it out. So I'll just complain. Just let me complain for a bit.
I think that's something with like YouTube release schedules, because like we have to hit a weekly or, you know, three times a week, whatever quota these channels have. And to try a new program, that requires like at least a week of like experimenting.
If you have
the schedule that you got to keep, a week of experimenting is not exactly available.
So if y'all don't know who Mike Jesus Langer and Tim Burgee are, Mike, Tim Burgee, and I recently worked on a project Mike wrote titled If You Break Down in a Slovakian Forest, Stay in Your Car. And Tim and I narrated it for his channel. It's Mike Jesus Langer, so simple. So I'm discussing it with them because I really had a lot of fun working on it, and I thought it was written amazingly, and I was the female voices in the story. Tim was all the dudes, and the whole thing just blew my mind. So if you haven't seen it yet or heard it yet, there's 299 views right now, so you probably haven't. You should check it out. It's really fun to listen to.
Drop on by.
Give it a listen.
Imagine this, a bumpy hill road in the middle of nowhere. The forest is so thick and overgrown that even on a clear Sunday morning, you need to keep your headlights on. The trees tower high above you and extend everywhere the eye can see. 100 years ago, these dark hills were a complete mystery to the local population. They still are. Now there's just a poorly kept road leading through them. Also, imagine this. A bad hangover, the type of hangover that comes with overindulging in plum schnapps of questionable origin. You feel your eyes pressing against the back of your skull. The concept of enjoying food without dry heaving seems like something you'll be able to experience late next week. Your mouth is a burnt down distillery that has been co-opted as a storage space for stubbed out cigarettes. Everything sucks, and it sucks hard. Now combine the two. That's where I was, sitting in the back of a car riding through tight turns in a road so rustic that it felt like I was in the sweaty bowels of an ill-medicated epileptic. The radio kept on indecisively stepping between a Slovakian fire and brimstone preacher, kooky Hungarian folk music, and the sharp hush of static. Next to me, with his big head pressed against the window, Yuri snored with the type of intensity that usually requires medical intervention. The snoring was far from pleasant, but it was significantly better than the alternative. Urian was just as hungover as I was, but where my fear of puking was purely hypothetical, his was a looming threat over the sanctity of the car. As soon as Yuri passed out and stopped crinkling the plastic bag on his lap, I felt considerably safer. Both Yuri and me were far too hungover to drive. Peter was behind the wheel. Even though the man was stone cold sober and didn't touch a single drink last night, I didn't feel particularly safe with him driving either. He kept his fingers wrapped around the steering wheel and refused any of my attempts at small talk, but I knew he wasn't really thinking about the road. Peter was a wreck. So was Yuri. Taking them out to the cabin was a mistake my wife had anticipated the moment I announced the trip.
It's just a guy's weekend off. Those two need some fresh air and distraction. What could go wrong?
Are you sure you know what you're getting into? You barely know them outside of work. I have a sneaking suspicion you might be biting off more than you can chew.
48 hours later, riding through the dark forest with my body drained of anything resembling joy, I found myself agreeing with my wife. I was just happy that I would be home in less than 3 hours if the D1 highway would be kind to us. The congestion on the D1 quickly became irrelevant. I was scared of Yuri puking on me or of Peter driving us off a cliff. But the betrayal came from a wholly unexpected place. My car. A reliable companion of over a decade was undone by a slightly uncomfortable incline.
What's happening?
Peter's broken-hearted trance was cracked by her sudden stop.
Is this? Shit, shit, shit!
The car started to slide backward. Before we knew it, we were off the road with the front of the vehicle peeking out of a ditch and the back bumper intimately acquainted with a tree. Yuri woke well after impact. Ugh, he said, assessing the situation. Then he vomited in the plastic bag he'd been clutching the whole way from the cabin. The damage was worse than expected. The engine had petered out on our way up the hill, but a bad engine can sometimes be persuaded to carry you to the nearest gas station on faith alone. What made any chance at a return to civilization nil was that our meeting with the tree caused one of the wheels to dislodge. There was no way to attach it back. The lug nuts were probably causing an overzealous squirrel terrible pain elsewhere in the forest. So there we were, stuck in a forest darker than sin in a car smelling of puke. My phone was out of battery, Peter's cell was sitting at 9%, and Yuri didn't believe in phones. Luckily, my insurance was quick to contact a tow truck. Unluckily, the closest one in my network was about 6 to 8 hours away. The air outside of the car made the situation considerably more bearable. Somewhere beyond the trees, there was a heat wave burning up the country, but in the shade of the woods, it was almost chilly. Almost. The air in the forest was perfect. It also didn't smell like vomit, which was a big plus. Yuri got out of the car after me and emptied out the plastic bag a good 10 meters away. The guy stumbled his way through the shrubbery, occasionally having to hold his sluggish body against a tree or two. I appreciated the courtesy. What I didn't appreciate is him stuffing the bag into the pocket of his shorts.
"I might puke again,"
Yuri said when he noticed me noticing. When I told my wife Yuri had just gotten out of a 6-year relationship, she was surprised he ever had one to begin with. After the cabin weekend, so was I. The forest was completely silent. All that could be heard was the rustling of trees from that ever so gentle breeze. It was nice. Almost. The stillness of the woods had made our lack of things to talk about much more apparent. "So, this, kinda sucks?"
"Yeah.
Should we, go check on Peter?"
"Yeah."
Peter was still sitting in the driver's seat, slumped over and staring off into the trees. He was back to thinking about the phone call he received last night. He was back to thinking about Bara. My knock on the window startled him. "Hey, Peter. I think me and Yuri are going to go wait on the road and see if we can get someone to give us a ride to a gas station or something." Want to join?
It's Sunday morning. It's Slovakia. We're in the middle of nowhere. There won't be any cars.
Yeah. The scent of puke and dislikes drifted by me. Beats right. No cars today.
So what? We just sit here for 6 hours doing nothing?
Yes, so. Yeah.
Maybe 8,
Peter added. That's where I was, stuck in the middle of a forest with someone who had just gotten out of a 6-year relationship and someone who had been an accessory to a failing affair, all with a hangover to boot.
Did you hear that?
Peter's expression suddenly changed. He got out of the car and turned towards the forest. His brow furrowed in focus. I heard it. A sweet song of gentle melancholy came from the darkest part of the woods. The words were completely foreign to me, but there was something within the music that spoke to me. There was something in the song of the forest that wanted me to get closer.
Women singing,
Yure said.
Should we go look?
Obviously not, I said out of reflex. Back when my grandmother was around, back when the cabin in the woods was hers, she told me stories. Stories of the forest and the creatures that dwell within it, of dumb travelers who ended up where they were not meant to be. I didn't recall anything specific about sweet songs in dark forests, but I wasn't planning on taking any chances.
Yeah, should probably stay in the car. Wouldn't want to bump into a bear or something, Peter said. It does sound mighty nice, though.
The song was, indeed, beautiful. I was still feeling like a walking corpse, but the sweet voices coming from the darkness were a balm to my tired soul. With the trees shivering above us, and that gentle gust in the wind, things seemed peaceful.
What would you guys do in my position? Peter asked, breaking the peace. With the whole Bara situation, I mean.
Forget about her.
We responded in unison, for the 10th time. Yuri was sulky about his heartbreak, but he stayed silent about it. Peter felt the need to discuss it during any lulling conversation. The guy had been seeing a girl for a good 6 months until he found out she wasn't exactly single. Upon finding out this information, Peter gave Bara an ultimatum. Him or the other guy. She said she needed a month to decide. After a month, she came back with a counterproposal. She would leave her boyfriend. In 3 months.
I was pretty sure I could let it go, but I don't know. After she called me last night, look, maybe she just doesn't want to ruin the guy's summer. They've been together for 2 years. That's a really long time. Bara's a really nice person. Sometimes it really gets in the way.
2 years is not a long time, Yuri said. His tone could sharpen steel. And Bara isn't a nice person. She's a manipulative bitch.
Do you guys want to go check out the singing? The words left my mouth without warning. Deep inside, I knew it was a bad idea, but I couldn't stand being witness to another discussion about Bara's personality or how incomprehensible the pain of a 6-year relationship ending is. In a moment of weakness, I let myself forget about my grandmother's stories. What could go wrong, I thought.
I have a sneaking suspicion you might be biting off more than you can chew.
All right. I'll leave a link to the narration, to the story, to the video on YouTube in the description. So, Mike.
Yes.
Wow. Like, why did you do this? Why? Where did you come up with this insanity?
Oh, God. This story specifically was written, I want to say, back in June when I went for a friend's wedding where I served as a witness.
I was not expecting this.
Yeah, no. I was coming back from a wedding in. God, I'm terrible with geography, so apologies, but I think this was Eastern Slovakia, and we were like riding back after the wedding. It was the groom, the bride, me, and the bride's two brother and a half brother. So you know, just like a car of people that drank way too much the night prior, and.
Oh, perfect.
Slovakian roads are Slovakian roads. The main ones are okay. The non-main ones are not okay. And we ended up going through, and this was middle of the summer, we ended up going through a shortcut sort of thing that will cut our travel time by like 45 minutes. and the trees in that forest were so thick, we legitimately had to turn on headlights, you know, on a summer day. And I was very hungover.
Oh my god.
Extremely hungover with two other hungover people on each side of me, one of which who kept on threatening to vomit. And I'm like, yeah, this is a horror. This is a story.
Yeah, this is a horror story.
Yeah. And then, you know, you're at a wedding, you see a bunch of couples, and you start thinking about broken hearts and all that sort of stuff. And that kind of connected with the general, like, Greek siren sort of theme, where you have, like, attractive women trying to lure innocent men into the forest so they stay there forever. I always like myself a little bit of mythology.
Wonderfully done. Wonderful. So, Tim, talk to me about your process for preparing for this, because you played three different people in it.
Yeah.
How did Tim approach you with the story, first off?
I guess I approached Mike, because I know that he does a lot of creative stuff. And I've been wanting to get into doing some voice acting or something with my voice for a long time. So we were both helping out a mutual friend of ours, Bruno, on a 48-hour film project last year, I think. It's also on Mike's channel. And then while we were doing that, I just talked to him and I said, like, hey, Mike, if you need another voice for a project, let me know. And then he did. I read it, and I'm relatively new to this. It's relatively long, at least for a first project. So my process was very very inefficient. I used Reaper to record and was figuring it out as I did it, and would accidentally delete things and, you know, have to figure out mic position and all that stuff as I went. The final thing is actually, it took me a long time and I kept procrastinating, but the final thing is actually just like one take, and then I just cut everything else out after. I tried doing it with like the narrator voice and then the other voices and then putting it in together. But for me, having less editing to do, like Mike does the main editing, but I try to like take out the flubs and stuff beforehand.
Right.
So yeah, it was just like one take.
Do you snap when you make a flub, or how do you get rid of your flubs?
Yeah, you suggested that to me and I tried that. I think I can also, you can just, you can see on the waveform if you're saying the same thing, right?
Right. Yeah.
So I guess, yeah, afterwards I listened to everything all the way through and then would pick it out, would cut out flubs. And sometimes, you know, I would do a couple of takes of whatever the line was, but all at the same time, like one after the other, and then afterwards go back and choose the best one.
I think that's kind of like the most productive advice that I have gotten in like making these narrations was about, I don't know, a month into like me taking a stab at it, and I've been doing this for about 2 years, where the two bits of advice was, first of all, edit at 1.5 speed. Because at least for like that first listen, when you're just making sure that,
yes,
you know, everything is in the right spot, like speed it up, first edits really, really saves time. Because if you're at 1.5% and you have a 30-minute story, then I'm terrible at math if I'm put on a spot, but I can assure you it's quicker. And then snapping is really, really helpful, because if you snap, it shows up on the wavelength as this very thin sort of going up and down line. And it makes it super easy to kind of say, like, oh, this is, it's like an eye-catching thing. So it speeds up those first edits. And I think if you speed up those first edits, You just generally give yourself a much faster workflow on narrations in general.
A lot of people, yeah, a lot of people don't know. Well, I won't say that. A lot of new narrators obviously wouldn't know that. Like, they just like, well, I'll just listen to the whole thing and just edit, cut out what I don't like. And,
yeah.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. It's tips like that that just give new narrators an edge, I think.
Which when it does come to tips, Dodge 82 has some delightful tips that she has on her YouTube channel that you should totally check out. No, seriously, like that's I think that's essentially how we know each other is off of those tip videos, where they really caught my attention. I was like, oh, this is like really good advice, and it's being given in like a 30-second video instead of the usual like 8 minutes. Like, hey, let me tell you how to do noise cancellation, but first let me tell you about my grandma and the history of Uzbekistan. So thank you for your community service, Dodge.
You're welcome. I will be deducting it in my taxes for volunteer work. And people. So with that, I listen to a lot of new horror narrators, a lot. And, you know, there are those things that a lot of new narrators do. And it was just like, okay, well, I'm going to leave you a comment in your video letting you know. And God, it's like a jerk move kind of. Sometimes they're like, oh my gosh, thank you so much for saying that. Everyone is just commenting good job and keep it up, but not really telling me what I can do to improve. Or you get the ones who are like, whatever.
Yeah. Like,
screw you. You don't know me. And how do I approach someone with more subscribers than I have and tell them the things that they can do to improve? Like, like, give me a break.
Yeah.
What can you tell me? So at some point, people had gotten to feel more comfortable with asking me to listen to their narrations and just be like, you know, give me your opinion. I know you're going to be brutally honest with me. You know, you're not going to blow smoke up my ass. You're going to actually tell me how it is and, you know, what I can do to improve. And it was just, you know, just one person at a time. Just like, okay, I'll listen to this. I'll listen to this. And I'll listen to your last, like, 3-5 videos, you know, just to see. Because you can't tell from the last video.
Yeah.
Definitely can't tell from the first one. So
first one is just potatoes.
It's just potatoes and dreams. That's all it is. So you know, you have to listen to it because sometimes a narrator has a bad day.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, and then I would just go to them and tell them. Usually for the most part they're receptive because they know I'm gonna like just really, I'm not going to rip into them. Like, I'm going to tell them the stuff that needs to be fixed. But some people are just like, they explain things away for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't about me, though.
I think in terms of like feedback and stuff, this is definitely something that I've learned over the past 2 years of like doing this YouTube thing. Something that I absolutely love is when I first started like pumping out more narrations, you know, like, you know, first, I think like 8 weeks that I've been doing this, everybody was just kind of quiet, being like, yay, good job, you're doing something in the middle of the pandemic. But then Prague is a very, very creative city. Both me and Tim, I'd say we're fairly deep into the filmmaking, sound design, artsy sort of community of expats over here. Because I think that's what a lot of foreigners come to Prague to do, is we're very relaxed when it comes to arts. Like, we have a really big art scene here. But about 8 weeks into me doing the narrations, I got a message that like radically altered the way that I look at feedback these days. It was from Petar Mrdian, the guy who does a lot of the music in my narrations, and he hit me up. He's like, dude, good job. you know, the usual, like, hey, you made something, congratulations. Which, by the way, that's a thing that if you do have a friend making stuff, send him that message. It cheers us up. But he followed it up with, are you looking for feedback?
Yes.
And I think asking people, being like, hey, good job that you did this, congratulations. And then, you know, kind of switching gears over to, hey, are you looking for feedback?
Yes.
Is really, really helpful, because you're not always looking for feedback. The moment after you post the thing, you don't really want to hear exactly what's wrong with it.
Yeah.
So I've gotten into the habit of asking that.
You're like, oh my God, thank God it's over. I never have to see this again. And then Someone comes in and is like, you could fix these 70 things and make it a lot better. You don't want to hear that.
There always is also a part with the feedback where quite often you know exactly what went wrong and you're like, you're aware of the issue and you don't necessarily need someone to point it out to you.
Yes.
Which I've definitely found that true, especially with like short film stuff where people are like, oh, this scene's kind of weird. It's like, yeah, because when we were shooting it, we were like 6 hours behind schedule.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One of my first narrations, I was, oh man, it was really bad. And I was trying to do all of my editing through Undershare Filmora. So I wasn't even using Audacity. It was just...
Does Undershare have audio components?
You can maybe change the audio...
volume.
You can equalize the volume. You can equalize it a bit. And maybe put like different filters onto it to make it like classical or techno or acoustic or, you know, stuff like that. But no, there's not really. So at some points my voice sounded like I was in a techno video. My voice went audio tune at some point. Uh-huh. It was really bad.
Nice.
Not nice. So at that point, I was like, yeah, I know everything I did wrong. There really is nothing more you can tell me. It was horrible.
By the way, I would like to point out that me and Tim previously met at like a good friend's birthday party. But when we actually talked about these narrations, Tim was dressed as a scarecrow.
You can actually see what that looks like if you search through Mike's channel, because I think you put the video up.
The name of the short film is, I think, just Tufarella. You can find us at 48-hour film project. And Tim's scarecrow makeup, by the way, fucking beautiful. Really, really nice makeup. Yeah.
You should have started with that, Tim.
I can't. I was not the makeup artist. I can't take credit for that.
I miss shooting stuff. We got to shoot something, Tim.
Yes, I think I'm looking forward to more stuff happening as the restrictions continue to ease and get back into doing more creative stuff.
Indeed.
Tim, you did an amazing job, Tim. I can't believe this is your first time narrating.
Well, it's my first time doing a narration like this. I guess, honestly, my entire life, probably since I was like 15, people have told me like, oh, you should be a newscaster or like something like that. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that would be fun. I did briefly attend a broadcast journalism school, and I ended up quitting. I quit before I finished. But when I was doing that, yeah, I have been behind a mic doing like sports news and stuff like that. But no, this was my first thing that, as far as I know, that was like more than a decade ago. So it's my first thing like this.
I'll be sure to write a sportcaster into one of my stories somewhere down the line so you can revisit.
Hell yes.
I do some acting, just like community theater stuff, nothing professional. And I am in an improv comedy group here in Prague. So I am...
Which one?
It's called Creative Differences. We're usually at the check-in, which is in Krimska, which is a part of Prague, for those who don't know. But yeah, just the point being, I do use my voice to communicate with people, I guess, in a way other than, you know, just normal talking. But from that side of things, I'm not a complete newbie, but I do consider myself a newbie to recording stuff like this.
Mm.
And I teach English too, which maybe that has some connection, you know, just talking to a group of people.
Interesting. Yeah. Wow. And you're comfortable being around people on stage, around in front of groups of people?
I love it. I really do. Yeah. I love performing like on a stage in front of people.
That's one of the great things about Prague is that we have like a lot of venues where like live performances in English are like a thing. With the check-in specifically, they not only do they have what do you say? What's called Script for Brains? Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, that's somebody else. Your Creative Differences.
Yeah, creative differences. Yeah.
Not only do they have Creative Differences, but also this no longer is a thing, but they used to hold a scratch night. Where people would write a quick play on a specific theme, and every month there would be like a showing of these plays, and just it's so awesome to live in a city that has like a very active community when it comes to improv and theater and the arts in general. Love the city.
It's so easy to get involved too, yeah. Because there is a very vibrant, active English-speaking expat community, yet it still is small. So there are people who have plays. There are a couple of film schools here who are looking for actors. So if you just show up and you're willing to do it, you've got a pretty good chance of being involved in something creative here. I think it's easier to get involved here than in a lot of other places.
Which on the note of creative things in the check-in, in my younger years, about 6 years back, I actually used to work in the check-in as the head of the pub crawl. So where Tim does his improv, I used to be there with like 120 very drunk tourists, where they would get 2 hours of free liquor, and then I was kind of their babysitter for a year of my life.
Yeah, Prague is also a very small city. There are multiple connections to anybody in the expat community.
Six degrees of alcoholism.
Yeah. Mike and I probably know each other like at least three different ways, three yeah. different people, I would say.
We only remember like one or two.
Every time Mike goes out, he's like, yeah, I ran into someone I know from, like, he just runs into people he knows. That never happens to me, ever. If I don't meet anyone unless I call them and actually meet them, there's no way to run into anyone.
See, we're a very pedestrian city over here, so, like, everybody's on public transport, and I would say... bars have like a revolving sort of clientele. So if you're like, oh, I want to meet this person right now, I will go to the check-in. Or if I want to meet this other person, I'll go to Mazin Chayovna, where there's like certain like hotspot bars where you can just go there on your own and you're bound to bump into people that you know, or you'll just talk to random strangers and everybody here is very, very welcoming.
Mm. Wow. I think a lot of voice actors and narrators were drama nerds. Like, they were into drama at some point. A lot weren't, but I'm finding that a lot more were into drama, but were not comfortable with acting on stage in front of people. So it's sort of like they retreated from being on stage to recording in their closets alone where it's safe. But it seems like that's the opposite for you though, Tim. Are you very animated when you recorded your lines?
I say one of the things for me is that pressure, if that's the right word, or energy mm-hmm. from other people really helps me do anything. I enjoy it. So on stage, and I do improv, so it's nothing. I do a little bit of acting, but mainly I do improv. And I like how it's in the moment, and there's the pressure of it being in the moment, and you're on yes. stage, people are watching, nothing's planned. That pressure for me brings out the best in me. Or if I don't have that pressure, I tend to just procrastinate and not do anything. So I think I told Mike like a dozen times, like, oh, I'm almost done.
Give me a deadline or I'll keep on tweaking.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know why. That's just I tend to procrastinate everything. So I need something outside of myself to put that social pressure, at least even just to finish something or to make it good. I wasn't involved in drama at all as a kid. I don't know why. Maybe like I've got involved in it to a degree as an adult and I like it. So maybe I would have liked it, but it's not something I did as a kid.
I think that's something where I'm on a similar kind of wavelength as Tim, where I actually do have a tiny bit of a drama background in my childhood, but none in my adult life. I used to be in this village where I used to go for the summer. They had a cultural festival, so every year I would be in like the kids' play. So I'm somewhat familiar with like being on stage, and I also work as a tour guide, so like I essentially have to do a 3-hour show for groups of 30-ish people.
Yeah.
Not on a long enough time scale, you get like very used to it. There's a very specific sort of energy as soon as you tap into like being in front of people.
Yes.
And there is a hump you need to get over, but as soon as you cross that hump, I think it gets a lot easier. What was really difficult for me in terms of like YouTube was starting with the narrations. And also most of the narrations on my channel aren't done by me. It's done by my friends and various other internet narrators, purely because like I prefer writing over doing the narrations. My biggest issue was like when I was like filming an update video and I was like, okay, I'm going to set up this camera and I'm going to talk to it. But then I was like, but I'm like to get good energy from like communicating with someone, I need somebody else in the room. Like, I would be filming the update videos. I'm like, this is just me alone speaking to a camera, which is a lot easier to handle with like a microphone because I'm like, oh, I'm familiar with how this works. Camera-wise, though, I'm just very low energy when I'm alone. I'll be high energy if there's other people around, but if it's just me, I'm like, I'll just talk quietly because there's no need to shout.
Put a wig on it.
Yeah.
Wow. No. Yeah, I did drama in high school, and I took drama in college, and I would still take it. I would just do it for fun, but I couldn't. You know, I needed an actual job.
Yeah,
so I didn't. You know what I mean? Like, I needed a job that can afford, you know, that will allow me to be a narrator. So,
the kryptonite of creative people is rent.
Is rent. It's rent and even food.
Yeah,
we'll figure everything else out in between. You mentioned that when you were recording, like you made mistakes and you had to delete it. But I feel like you were you making mistakes and you having to do multiple takes was kind of a godsend in a way, because so many narrators, they don't do that. They just do that whole, they try to record everything in one take and they just, you know, kind of hope for the best. And then just try to cut it nice, like try to cut it and make it okay. But you having to do it over and over again probably gave you that edge in you know, doing things over again and feeling more comfortable with the material, I think.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but by the end of it, I knew the story pretty well. So.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, and it's
you
true.
Didn't even have to look at the script.
Yeah, and you do, like, or at least I would notice things in the text, like, mm-hmm. more, like, or different things when reading it again. So, yeah, there probably is an advantage to doing it that way. Not that I will try to do that again in
no.
the future.
Right, no. Without all the cutting. Preferably, yes.
From a writing perspective, when...
Yeah.
Because you do have to listen to these things over and over and over as you edit. And the past few years, I've kind of been editing all of my own stuff and organizing the voices as well. But prior to 2020, I had a little, like, two-episode radio play called Mosaic of the Apocalypse, which is also on the channel if you want to go check it out. And that was something where we recorded it, and it's very heavily produced. It's more of an audio play, so you have, like, a specific narrator, but most of the story is told through, like, sound effects and all that sort of stuff. And the production time on that will, you know, took up to a month or so. And then listening back to it, as I'm getting, like, updates and Lee Clark, delightful sound guy, he's, like, asking me, oh, you know, feedback, what do I change, how do you want this, that sort of thing. One of the most painful things as a writer who was, like, very new to this was re-listening to things that already, you know, they're done. You're not going to change the text anymore. And then, like, finding that one line where I was like, God damn it, that would not survive another draft.
Yeah.
Like, this is going well, but if I could go back in time, this one line, and you have to yeah. listen to it over and over and over again, so that line will,
yeah.
will keep on haunting you.
Yeah, it's like me with narrations. I'm like, oh my gosh, I could have said that better. I could have said that so much better. I loved when you said that you, Tim, when you said that you feed off of other people's energy when you're doing improv, and, you know, you feel at home there with that need to be pushed. And that completely, like, registered with me. Like, that's completely me. Tim can give me a deadline of Friday. I will submit my audio Friday at 11:59 p.m. Like, it is just, like, I also need, I procrastinate forever. I need Mike to get on me about that mess every time.
I think that's if another thing that I've, like, definitely learned over the past 2 years is working with deadlines is really, really helpful, because I think the go-to kind of,
yes.
you know, if you're working together with friends or with peers, like, you want to be relaxed about it. You can be like, hey, here's the story. Can you get me back the lines at some point in the near future? I know we all have stuff going on.
No.
But this kind of, like, very laissez-faire approach usually ends up with nothing being delivered for a couple of weeks. So being, like, specific, being like, even if there is no pressure, be like, hey, no pressure. Can we, like, set up a timeline for this at this point? Also, when you have those deadlines set up, when it does come to, like, production of narrated stories, if you have, like, multiple voices, or if you're working with another narrator, it's really helpful to have those deadlines set up, because that also gives you something that you don't have to think about that specific story until that given date. And then you can, like, come back and be like, hey, what's up? When's this coming?
Yeah.
How's it going? Yeah, but definitely, like, putting these tent poles and then just allowing yourself not to think about that specific recording for X amount of time is really helpful in, like, staying organized while making online content.
Absolutely. Oh, my gosh, yes. Dude, don't even get me started with collabs. Oh, my God, collabs. And then I get into this headspace where I'm like, yeah, I want to work with other people. This is great. And then 2 weeks into the collab, and I'm like, now I have to act like a dang bill collector. Like, now I have to be, like, knocking on doors. So that audio, where's that at? You good? Like, don't ghost me. Like, just tell me you need more time.
Yeah, But I do think also, like, if you are working with like a lot of folks, or just generally, if you're relying on other people to deliver content, what I would really, really recommend is not having a public release date for your stories if you're still waiting for them to get finished off. Because, you know, like, life gets in the way. Sometimes people,
of course,
you know, can't perform in the optimal fashion, or they have other stuff going on. To not be public about your release schedules before you actually finish off the project is really, really helpful. Even though there is, I have a little bit of a psychology background, and I have never used my degree, so I'm going to be really bad at explaining this. But there is a school of thought that when you announce that you're going to do something, that your brain chemistry is responding as if you've already finished it. Because announcing it is one of the steps in finishing it. But announcing something publicly will give you like an endorphin rush. It will make you feel good because, like, yeah, I'm doing something. But you need those brain chemicals to actually finish off a thing.
Yeah, that's just shooting yourself right in the freaking foot. There's no, and then when people are like, "Oh yeah, it's Friday, so you're gonna be done tomorrow, right?" Dude, I still need 3 more audios from people. Like, there's no way. Like,
that's something that I found really helpful as a content creator is to work on like a really big backlog. Essentially I post every Friday, and now I post Tuesday, like older stories compiled into one big video. But being able to essentially say that I have like the next 8 weeks of content pre-planned, if anybody wants early access to it, they can like jump on Patreon, which is like kind of where I just chuck all of my stuff as I finish it. But knowing that the release schedule on YouTube will not be threatened by like a thing not getting finished, really helpful, because also the YouTube algorithm is pretty cruel. If you like miss a week, the algorithm does not respond kindly. But having stuff done ahead of time, if you're on a regular schedule, is really, really helpful.
Having backups, absolutely.
Yeah.
If when I narrate, when I record audio, I'm recording audio for like 2 hours. I'm recording my shorts, I'm recording short stories, I'm recording maybe if there's like an RPG horror story or something that's short, that's less than 500 words, I'm recording that. I'm recording for my secondary channel, I'm trying to like positive morning affirmations or something, like something on that. I've never just recorded for one thing and left. That doesn't even compute in my brain.
I think usually when I record it is like a one thing sort of setup, where it's either like,
dude,
like a full narration, because I don't do narrations that often, but like I'll have series where I'll just record the whole thing because it's just a lot easier on a production scale. But then I have issues with because I work off my laptop, and it is slowly leaving me, and I'm waiting till the summer to get a new one. Girl's 8 years old. Mm-hmm. She sometimes huffs like an emphysema patient, but she's still holding on. The problem with like working on outdated tech is that like some of these programs just don't work the way that they should. So like I do a lot of my editing on Audacity, and I have like a, you know, bazillion different files open. But if I plug in my microphone, I need to shut down Audacity and then record, because Audacity refuses to recognize my microphone while Audacity is still open.
Crazy.
So having to, it's always like, I'll just take the microphone to the table, put it down, quickly shut everything off, quickly record something, then go lay back down on the couch, and then start editing again. So I record stuff in bursts.
Man, adapt and overcome for sure.
Oh yeah.
Tim, I think you are one of the first narrators that I've listened to that I was like, I don't know what your actual voice is, because you had to go through 3 different characters throughout the story. One had, what was it? Was it a Russian accent?
I guess so. Yeah, Yuri.
Yuri, yeah.
I don't, you see, I don't know if the character, I didn't ask Mike before, if like the characters are meant to have a particular nationality, but it's set in Prague. So I think I can do a passable Russian accent. So I went with that mainly just to keep it different from the other ones. That was my thought in choosing, just making sure they're distinct so you can tell who it is.
Yuri is, as far as I know, like a Slovakian / Ukrainian name. But I would say Slavic accents, which is, you know, like Russia and essentially most of Eastern Europe, do sound fairly similar.
Sounds really convincing. And then you went with Peter. It was an American accent?
I guess so. I think Peter was just... He was just like a little, he just spoke a little differently, I guess, like a bit softer, maybe a little bit higher pitched. And the narrator is pretty much me. It's a version of my voice, I guess.
I was wondering the whole time, like, is that his voice? Or is his voice Peter, and he just added like gruffiness to his voice? It was really awesome to listen to.
I would say my voice naturally is deeper, is gruff, but I try to sound more like Peter when I'm talking to people and socializing, just so like I seem nicer and friendlier.
Let me tell you about my ex.
What?
That's Peter's main tenet of his personality.
Yeah.
When it does come to switching around voices, Dodge, you did a killer job as well with the different swamp ladies.
Thank you.
the humming that you gave me is very, very ominous as well.
Jeez, the way you edited it together, it gave me chills. And it's like how you had it to punctuate the story and their dialogue. It was just like, oh my god, yes, that's great.
I'm trying to remember editing this story, but all of these edits are, you know, just like these weird fever dreams that I do not recall. Where it's a very different approach to writing, where like when I'm writing, it's either going to be like, you know, every sentence is a fight, or it's I know what I'm doing, da 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 da, here's a page of stuff. And I found that if I go back, if every sentence is a fight, I generally don't need too much editing. And if I'm writing and I feel like super inspired, like, yeah, this is going real good, then I reread after myself, yes. And I'm like, oh, this is the story that I wanted to tell, but there's so many typos and so many sentences just kind of like drop off. With editing, radically different. It's, I'll sit down and I'll be like, okay, time to do some editing. It's 2 a.m. I'm going to do like half an hour just to like kind of set myself up for a better day tomorrow. And then, you know, I plug in my earphones. I do a lot of the editing where I essentially shut off my laptop screen, like I dim it down, and I'm just sitting in the darkness listening for like specific issues or something like that. Like I try to fully focus on what I've just edited, and then I'll be like, yeah, I'll just do 30 minutes, and next thing I know, the sun is rising in the background, and I'm like, god damn it, I was trying to set up a normal sleep schedule. But it's really easy to get yourself lost in the editing flow once you actually get there.
Yes.
It's a question of getting there.
Yes. Absolutely. Just 30 minutes. The biggest lie I tell myself every day is, I'm just going to edit this for 30 minutes. No, 8 hours pass. It's my whole day.
Do you guys find that there is this sense of flow with narration as well? Or are you kind of aware of time passing as you narrate?
I'm in a closet. Like, there's no time.
Are you in a closet right now?
Right now, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Surrounded by clothes. No, time doesn't exist. I don't even think I look at the time on my laptop until I'm done recording, so. Or until I start sweating. Then it's an issue.
If I recall correctly, the story that you that you read for the Professor Egghead series involves like a very sweaty character. where
It
that's
was
like an
all legit.
that's an important part of the story is that she is sweaty.
Perfect. It was straight from my heart. All real. That huffing, that, you know, out of breath. Yeah, that was me in my closet.
I'd say for me, I don't have enough experience yet to say. I mean, I've done two stories or narrations for Mike now, one of which is up, one of which is coming soon, I assume. So I can't say. I mean, it does take me quite a while. I'm still, you know, adjusting the settings and everything. So yeah, I'm not in a state of flow yet when I'm doing it at all. But
there was a moment where Tim asked me like very specific, like a good question in on the front of like sound design, where I think it was like something about what the sensitivity of the microphone should be compared to the decibel levels of like Tim came to me with like a very legitimate question that you should ask somebody who's like, you know, been doing sound design for 2 years, and my only response was like, just whatever sounds better, because I have no idea what any of these words mean.
yeah ask any horror narrator that question, they'll be like, I don't freaking know. I mean, there'll be some that there'll maybe be a couple that know, but from the group I know, they'll be like, where do you even find that? Is that an effects on all that? Like, where, what do you mean? Hold on, let me Google that. Like, they won't know.
Yeah,
they hit record and hope for the best.
I think that's the sort of things with like self-taught people is that like, yeah, we don't really have the vocabulary. When I speak to my sound design friends, like, oh, just EQ this through like this many hertz and da 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 da, and I'm like, can you send me a screenshot of what that should look like?
Yeah, what do I click on? Yeah, it's self-taught. We're surrounded by people who are self-taught, who learn from each other, maybe, and who are just like freaking crawling their way through, hoping. Yeah, the same way.
I think the question I had, one that I remember asking you was, I was picking up the fan noise from my laptop, because my laptop is far from silent. So that's what I was dealing with. And it's like, do you just like turn down like the gain on the mic, you know, so you don't hear it, but then then my voice is also quieter, and then you just raise that in post. That was the question. Which I still don't. I mean, I guess the long term solution is to have a quieter recording environment. But I still don't know a lot of these things, how to go about it the right way. But that's part of the reason I'm doing that, why I recorded it, and I'm open to recording more stuff, is because I want to learn by doing, so I get better at it.
I promise you, there's plenty of stories to be recorded. I'll hit you up.
You gave him a doozy, Mike, to start with.
Yeah.
Jesus.
There's periods of writing where I'll go from like the general shorter creepypasta thing to stuff that's significantly longer, just because I feel like there's a bigger story there. But like, I don't remember these stories that great, because I essentially write a bunch of first drafts, then I go back and edit them. So I'll be editing something that I wrote like 3 months ago with 15 stories after that. So I kind of lose memory of what is happening, which makes editing a lot more fun. It's one of the reasons why I also like using other people's voices, because then I'm listening to the story, I'm like, ooh, I don't know what happens in this one. So it makes the whole process a lot more exciting. But I think with the Slovakian story that Tim read, and then there's a story that was even longer that I like sent to someone, and I was like, hey, can you read this? And I didn't get a response, and then I kind of like, because I was looking for somebody else to read like a specific character in the story, I clicked on it, and I was so sure it was like a 5-page story max. 12 pages. Mm. And then I'm like, oh, okay, I understand why you did not respond. I will read it myself.
Jesus.
Because that's a lot.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Yes. That's a part-time job.
Yeah.
No benefits. I think narrators know a story sometimes even better than the author.
Oh, definitely. Like, especially since I've written a lot of these things. I think we're somewhere near like 150 for the past 2 years now.
Amazing.
You know, because there was You're a global crazy. Pandemic and there wasn't much going on for people working in the tourism industry.
Right.
But it, like, there's a lot of like older stories that I'll like send over, be like, oh, I have a free spot open this Friday. There's no series going on. Can you please narrate this? And then they'll hit me up. Or like I'll bump into them at a party and they'll like start talking to me about the narration. And I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Cause like I know the story like features spiders, and that's how far my knowledge of this story goes.
Maybe it's not a narrator discussing it with an author after they've, you know, put a lot of time and more work between it. But I, for sure, a narrator knows a story better than just a random reader mm-hmm. of a story. Because they're just reading it once, maybe twice. But a narrator, they're reading parts of it over and over and over. I mean, if, you know, especially if they're starting out, over and over again. And so you pick up those nuances and what the author has written, and you're just like, oh, that's really cool. That callback though, nice touch. Just like, I love that. I think I appreciate writing a lot more as a narrator because I am forced to read things over and over again and pick up on the little things, especially when they have like maybe a clue in the beginning of a story. And then, you know, they bring it up. You realize what they were cluing into later on in the story. You're like, oh my gosh, that was brilliant. Great job.
It's a lot easier to catch foreshadowing if you have to go through the whole story 10 times.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And then edit it. So then you're reading it and listening to it multiple times.
Do you have a big gap between the recording and editing, or do you just record and then you directly go to edits? Question for both you and Tim, actually.
For me, again, I'm new. So, I mean, when I finished that story off, I think I did the editing right after. Mm-hmm.
So... It depends. It depends on what my load is. Because I would do a lot of recordings at once, it can be months later.
I think that's...
It could be weeks.
Like having that barrier in time for... I think editing, like, raw dialogue is pretty good to, like, do... Fairly close after you record, from the stories that I've recorded, I've had these moments where like I'm recording it and I'm like, God damn it, I'm making so many mistakes here. This is taking ages. But then when you like you zoom out on the wavelength, like, nah, Mike, that was 30 seconds. Like, calm down. But then doing actual edits, this is something that I've started doing with the Professor Egghead series, where I will have the dialogue like. The dialogue cut is something that I want to do as soon as possible. Once I have all the voices, I want them all, like, in a single file, loosely timed out. Then I'll do a music / ambience sort of edits, which usually doesn't take that long. But as I'm editing that, I'm like, oh, I want sound effects here, and here. And when I first started out, I would just do, like, sound effects, ambience, music, and the dialogue cuts on the same exact day, and that stuff is exhausting because you're interacting with like the same, you know, 2 minutes of audio over and over and over again. Then you move on to the next 2 minutes. But what I found really, really helpful By the way, I did not know about this until about a year and a half into working with Audacity. If you press Command B, it's state of flow. So I found really helpful to just press Control B, code sound, that's future Mike's problem. And kind of working like that has has been a lot smoother than usual over the past couple of weeks.
Yeah. I use that as well. For sure. I need to use it more, though. Because I go back again and again for some reason. Like, I notice a mistake and then I go back to the beginning and then listen to it again to see if the tempo of the audio is right.
I've had like super infuriating moments where, because I'm re-releasing a lot of work that I did, you know, like a year or two back, essentially like cutting together. I do a lot of series on the channel. So for example, Dodge actually narrated the beginning of this one because we had really bad audio from 2 years back. And also because she is a delightful voice, she narrated the beginning of the Hundred Eyed God series, which is like this 3-hour epic written during the first coronavirus lockdown, which some parts of it have aged really well. And I'm like happy that those stories exist. And I'm like, ooh, what was I thinking March of 2020? But other parts have aged like milk. But going back to the editing of that series was very frustrating because I edited it before I really knew anything about sound design. So I had all of the source files on an external hard drive, and then I just kind of go back to, you know, my work from 2 years ago. I'm like, you couldn't label anything, Mike? Right. Like, really, it was that difficult to click on the track and be like, this is dialogue, this is music. And then even going through the tracks, I'm like, this isn't a music track. You're like mixing both street ambience and music and sound effects all in the same exact track. So it's super difficult to like edit it. So if I may provide some advice to future narrators, label your stuff properly. And if you're using the Control B trick to like put in notes, be like, oh, this is where sound effect is needed and all that sort of thing, make sure you delete those notes once you actually put in the sound effects, because it makes for the messiest workspace possible. And it makes me angry at myself every time I come across like, this is where you put in a sound effect of door opening. So I go and I find it and I cut it and I like have it at the right volume. And then I put it in there and then I hear two doors opening because I already put that door opening there 2 weeks ago and I was just too lazy to delete the notes.
The label. Oh man, like 2 years past me editing, a completely different person.
Yeah.
Night and day.
We all evolve.
I have a confession to make. I haven't actually listened to it since I did my edits. I don't.
You haven't listened to the whole thing yet?
No, I haven't. I haven't. I tried to, but I think it's not that rare. But I have this thing where I really don't like listening to myself or watching myself in something. I don't enjoy it at all. So I have not listened the full way through the entire recorded thing.
I completely get you on that front, where especially, you know, since you're new to the whole narration game and whatnot, those first couple of stories are just difficult to look back into.
No, I love it. I love listening to it. I listen to my narrations to fall asleep. I fall asleep to my narrations while I edit. Like, it's just, I love it.
Has that always been the case for you? Or when you were starting out, did you find it a bit strange to listen to yourself?
Well, I used to work in a call center. And I worked in a call center for like a decade, like for a long time. And the only time where I hated listening to my voice is when I had to do side by sides with my supervisor, and I had to listen to my phone calls.
What's a side by side in a call center?
A side by side, like when you because you know these calls may be monitored or recorded for quality purposes. So when your supervisor like picks one of your calls out of the recording, you sit with them and, you know, they go over how you did the call, if you touched all the points with the greeting, with the personalizing the call, and whether you reacted and were able to multitask, and how fast the call was. So they're recording, they're going over, they're evaluating your call with the customer.
Oh God, and you have to sit there while they do it? Oh God, that's rough.
Some supervisors have already done it, and they're really pretty much just telling you, like having you listen to the parts where they're like, you could have improved here. But sometimes you're listening to the whole call with your supervisor.
As they're reacting, a live stream of somebody telling you what your work is like. Whoop.
Yes. Yeah. That was painful for me. I couldn't live. I'm like, you just fail me. Just fail my call and I'll leave. I'm good. I'll take your word for it, just so that I wouldn't have to listen to it. But no, now my narrations, I love listening to them.
Which by the way, when it does come to like call center stuff, that is like prime real estate for like creepypasta audio content.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Because customers are crazy.
Oh, I have heard many a story.
Mm-hmm. How many times have I been proposed to, you ask? Oh, like 5 times at least. It's great. I should have known I should be a narrator. didn't hit me until later in life.
No, that's sorry. I have like my wheels fully turning on the customer service creepypasta sort of thing. Where I think that also kind of like bumps into what we talked about earlier about like Discord being a pretty good place to like organize performances that kind of bounce off from each other.
Oh yeah,
somewhere down the line. I just need to finish off these egghead edits.
You have to strike when the iron is hot, Mike.
I need to. I can't multitask with these things. I just really want to get all the egghead edits done, and then I am a free man, and I can work on whatever the hell I want to.
Well, me, I got to jump right in. I got to, as soon as the thought is in my head and the feeling is in my soul, I have to jump right on it, or else the feeling and the inspiration is gone. So good for you, man.
I am writing it into my little notes file, which by the way, this is another thing that I found really, really helpful in terms of just like staying inspired when you're writing these things, is to just kind of use your phone to write down every single idea that you have. And like, you know, when you're starting out, it's going to be a lot of ideas that just aren't doable, you know, or are doable, but would require a lot more time investment than what you're willing to give it.
Yeah.
But if you keep on writing all of your ideas, even the dumb ones, which tend to be super short to put together, then that essentially gives you like a well of stuff that whenever, you know, you're sitting on a Wednesday evening and you're like, I don't feel like doom scrolling anymore. Let me be productive. What do I work on? And then you just kind of go to this giant file of like ideas. You can be like, okay, well, I want to work on something quick that I can get done by the end of the evening. Bing, bang, boom. Here are like super short ideas. Doesn't necessarily have to be good. Consider this practice. That sort of approach, I think, is really good to like, you know, getting your practice in and getting better at the craft of writing or narrating or anything for that matter.
Yeah, exactly. And it'll get you through that dry spell. Maybe it wasn't a good idea for this story, but if I plug this into that story, that could really help it flow well.
Well, you can definitely scrap stuff for parts as well. Like, ooh, yeah. I like this one very specific aspect of the story. Let me just reuse it somewhere down the line. I think this is the beauty of like posting stuff on the internet, is that the internet has like a very short attention span. So if you wrote a story 2 years ago that has like that you just don't generally like, but there's a couple of elements in it that you like, and I think that's what any sort of art that you'll create, even if it's not good, there always will be bits and pieces that you're like, oh, this is why I did it. Maybe the execution was unoptimal, But you can always just like take stuff from your earlier work, reuse it, and nobody really notices because the internet is like there definitely are regular listeners and whatnot. But I think when it does come to internet content, it is just the masses kind of moving around. So every story that you put out, there's going to be a stranger interacting with it. So people shouldn't be too stressed about like what they did before and like being scared of repeating themselves.
That's a good note. Yeah, because I have that fear that if I try to repost this or try to tweak this, then people be like, hey, nice try, but like,
just like call
you out on it. Yeah, where have I read this? On the 14th of July, 2017. Yeah, like, no one gives a crap. Yeah. No one cares. That's good to hear. That because there are things that I've written and posted that, you know, looking back at it, and reading it again, I'm like, well, I could have done way better than that. Or you know how it is when you try to write and you just sort of like try to power through, mm-hmm. and you don't give it that time to breathe. So then, after you finish something and you look back at it, you're like, wait, that would have been a better idea to take that instead of, you know, whatever you went with.
I think that's also the importance of like letting things breathe, is that you can come back to it in 2 months. And once the story, you know, falls out of your memory, it's no longer directly connected to your ego. So being like, oh, this part isn't good. Doesn't feel like, oh, I am a bad person, or my internal monologue is lacking because 5 minutes ago when I wrote this down, it wasn't perfect. So I think people are a lot more open for self-criticism and being, I don't know, merciful towards themselves the longer you go from writing a thing to editing it. What I've started doing through 2020, because I've been writing for a really long time, but I think it is with the pandemic that I was kind of forced into taking all the things that I've learned over years and years and be like, okay, well, you got nothing else to do. It's jogging and running. Set up a system. What I started doing that I found really, really helpful for both like calming any amount of like artistic resistance that I would have to like not power through it. Or like, oh my God, I'm not like, oh, I have a migraine. Let me go work on something else. And then I would just feel guilty, or let me go do something else. But then I was like, but I really wanted to write today. I found this to be really helpful, is to essentially make a note to yourself at the top of the Word document when you're writing the story, being like, I remember the first note that I wrote was for my second story, the Saxophone of Eric Zahn, which was a story that was essentially bouncing off of an H.P. Lovecraft story called The Music of Eric Zahn. And the comment on top of that story is, this is 27-year-old Mike taking a stab at writing H.P. Lovecraft, something he's never done before. And that like made me so much calmer as I was doing it. I'm like, oh yeah, I'll be like 30, I'll look back at this and be like, oh, 26-year-old Mike had more hair on his head.
Oh,
but such a
a warm, sweet summer child.
I
how far you have come.
Yeah, like, you know, allowing yourself to kind of, you know, take a tent pole, put it in the ground, be like, this is who I am right now, this is the skills that I have, I'm doing my best. And then being able to come back to it later, being like, oh yeah, I've aged, I've improved as a writer, I am older, I am wiser. You are going to be a lot more merciful with that edit, and you won't take the issues in that story as personal issues. With that said, though, there's a super big asterisk on like writing notes to yourself, and that is before you send stuff out to a narrator, make sure you deleted those notes. there was oh God, this is like a year and a half back, and this is so irrelevant that I literally do not remember like exactly what the situation was, but I know I was going through like some stormy romantic issues, and this is a story that I wrote like 6 months back, and I give it to a narrator, and he opens up the story being like, Laura's not writing back to my messages, and I'm kind of nervous. And then he just continues reading the story, and I'm like, oh my god.
Oh no. Oh no.
And then I look at the because we were recording this in my place, and I look at them and I'm like, no questions about the first line of the story. He's like, I don't know, it seems a bit out of place, but like it sets up the mood, doesn't it? I'm like, I guess.
Yeah. Totally, yeah, totally. Yeah. It was just a mood sentence. Yeah. You've heard of those, right?
Yeah, this is the opening quote at the start of the movie.
What advice would you give first narration Tim?
What advice would I give to somebody doing their first narration? Just do it. I guess, you know, then it's out of the way. You'll learn something in the process. I think I did learn quite a lot just from doing it. So, I'm happy it's out of the way. And hopefully the next one will be better and I'll have a better workflow and all the rest of it.
The next one is get in there and get started. Some sort of a series where you're calling Dodge for customer support.
Dude, please. Dude.
Oh, dude, I can totally do this. Yes. I just need to finish this egghead stuff.
Oh, man. All right, so 6 months later.
No, keep in touch, Tim. This will be done. This will be done in like a week. That's what I keep telling myself.
Oh, no. My audio's pretty shit, so it might be a month.
I'm sure it's fine, Dodge.
Any questions that y'all would like to ask?
I think I'm good. We're running on hour 42 minutes now.
Yeah.
The time has slipped by very, very quickly.
When you're having fun.
Yeah, no questions. Thanks.
Yeah, no, it's been a pleasure being on my YouTube channel, Mike Jesus Langer. You can find the new series of Professor Egghead stories that are coming up. They launch every Friday at 10 p.m. And I also have compilations of other series as like big videos dropping every Tuesday. And when it does come to the Egghead stories, you will both hear Dodge and Tim in the coming weeks. I think Dodge should be coming in about 4 weeks, and I think Tim's story is going to be the story that we kind of close off this chapter of Professor Egghead. So it's going to be a couple of weeks, but they'll be there, and they are fantastic. So check that out, and also follow me on Twitter, Mike J. Langer. I don't use it that much, but, you know, more numbers, the more important I feel.
He has a ton of amazing, oh my gosh, of amazing work on his channel, written and sometimes narrated by him. Gosh, what was the one with the guy who worked in the Institute?
Journals from the Institute. That is an 8-part series that is all narrated by me. And there should actually be a compilation video of that dropping, I think, next Tuesday. So everything in like one big, oh god, it's really long. I think it's going to be like a 4-hour video, but if you want to ever pass out the ramblings of a Czechoslovakian scientist somewhere deep in Soviet territory who is dealing with Lovecraftian knowledge, essentially if you want to watch me on audio slowly losing my mind as you go to sleep, there we go.
So relaxing. Tim, anything you wanted to plug?
No, nothing to plug. Yeah, I'll plug Mike's channel too. It's there's some great stuff on there. It's it's a lot of fun to be a part of. Maybe I'll have something to plug down the road, but for now I'm still focused on improving my craft and getting better at this.
If you're in the Prague area, make sure you drop by.
Yeah, sure. You can check out Creative Differences. We have a infrequently updated Facebook page. Yeah. And Hopefully we'll have a show again soon. Improv show. And yeah, that's the only thing to plug. So thank you.
Yeah, amazing work, you guys. It was so fun.
It's been
working
a blast
with y'all. Yeah, man. But yeah, thank you guys so much for joining us. And thank you, Mike Jesus Langer. Thank you, Tim Virgie, for joining us. And I will catch y'all on the next page.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks.
Bye.
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 Bye.